You're listening to the Common Fan Podcast, a Husker football podcast for the common fan by the common fan.
Schlesinger and Phillips in the eye to snap to Tommy, and they give him the trap play, and it's Schlesinger inside the five, and there for the touchdown! He's got the touchdown! It's the touchdown for Corey Schlesinger, and Nebraska takes the lead with 2:46 left to go in the ballgame. And the national championship is Nebraska's. Bring that trophy back to Lincoln.
Welcome back to the Common Fan Podcast. I am TJ Burkle, as always, alongside Matty Owens Sr. and Geoff in Lincoln. Football season is right around the corner, Common fans, and you need to be stockpiled up on certified Piedmontese beef for your tailgates and game-watching parties. Good news on that front. You can now get 25% off beef purchased at cpbeef.com using the promo code COMMONFAN, all one word, COMMONFAN. Certified Piedmontese is a premium Nebraska beef company, and they've got everything from steaks to burgers to ribs to hot dogs and more. Stop by your local Mercado Butcher Shop in Lincoln or Omaha, or get 25% off at cpbeef.com using promo code COMMONFAN. And get certified Piedmontese products shipped right to your front door anywhere across all 50 states. Certified Piedmontese, powering the Husker football team and powering the Common Fan Podcast. Common fans should also make sure to check out our brand new website, www.commonfan.co. Sign up for our free newsletter, subscribe on YouTube, and keep up with all the fun and frivolity of the Common Fans. We went to TS Web Services to build the site for us, and we could not be happier. The team of experts is dedicated to providing top-notch solutions tailored to your needs. Whether you need web development or hosting, they've got you covered. We had a great experience working with their team. They were very responsive and delivered high-quality work. TS Web Services can help improve, design, or host your website, and you can see a prime example of their work at www.commonfan.co. We are absolutely thrilled to have a giant in the Nebraska sports landscape joining us today. He is currently the voice of Nebraska basketball and previously served as the announcer for both Nebraska football and basketball from 1974 to 1996. He's a member of the Nebraska Broadcasters Association Hall of Fame, and he is literally the voice of the Huskers for an entire generation of Nebraska fans, and that includes all three Common fans here today. We are talking about the one and only Kent Pavelka. Kent, it is an unbelievable honor to have you join us. Thank you for being here today.
I'm pleased to do it. Let's talk.
Let's dive in.
Let's talk.
Let's talk. Kent,
we just finished a 6-episode series looking back at all of the Nebraska football coaches of the post-Osborne era, basically. And you know, it's funny because we're old enough to remember, you know, looking back before the national championships, people were losing patience with Tom Osborne, and, you know, he couldn't win the big one was always the line. And I remember that as a kid. You know, now looking back at some of the roller coaster of the last 25 years, it's clear how remarkable his consistent success really was. What made T.O. so good?
Oh, wow. That's a really good question. Might take an hour to talk about him.
We've got time.
He was an unparalleled football mind, for one thing, offensively in particular. And that's not embellishing it at all. He was the offensive coordinator and head coach. I mean, he didn't give up calling the plays once he became head coach. And that tells you something, given the success of his program. He was smart enough to understand, I think, that Nebraska needed to be different offensively than everybody else. Thus the I formation and the option. very, very cool move, clever move in that, you know, a lot of times like Oklahoma, people didn't face that offense, didn't have to defend that offense very often. So it was difficult in a week's time to get prepared for Nebraska. And then you combine his intelligence, his coaching ability, his ability to put a staff together and keep a staff, and then to get better athletes, you know, in the late 80s, wasn't quite good enough, and that started to develop in the early 90s, and you saw the fruit of that in the three national championships. Now, I say it wasn't quite good enough. I mean, he had never had fewer than 9 wins. So the bar has always been pretty high here. And, you know, it just got old for a lot of people to be undefeated, go into the Oklahoma game, get beat by Oklahoma, go to the Orange Bowl, get beat by Miami. I mean, it was almost like clockwork that those kinds of things happened. But everybody, you know, fans were frustrated that Nebraska couldn't get over to the top of the mountain. And, but boy, they did on January 1st or 2nd, 1995, when they beat Miami. Talk about a period of time, a long stretch between national championships. You know, it had been since 1971 that it was 23, 24 years before he won one. So I guess, you know, you talk about the last 25 years here at Nebraska hasn't been so good. Fans have suffered through long periods of time, but back in those days, suffering was winning 9 games. So right. A little bit of difference.
Still winning the conference pretty regularly.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Winning the conference or finishing second to Oklahoma. I mean, it was a 2-man race always, until Colorado got good. And then it was a three team league, but you know, those were great days. They're long gone. The whole paradigm has changed in so many ways. There's no way to compare then to now, really.
Well, and Kent, I'm glad that you said that, because there's some parallels there. You mentioned getting back to the top of the mountain, which we're still trying to do to this day. And any good fan podcast likes to look to the future with high expectations and hope. So I would be remiss if I didn't at least pick your brain about Matt Rhule a little bit here. So you've seen some things. You've called just about every one of Tom Osborne's games. I mean, you knew Bob Devaney, for Pete's sake. You've seen and worked with some of the best in the business. So you know a thing or two about coaching and how this thing operates. Is there anything that stands out to you about Matt Rhule? Do you think he can have sustained success at Nebraska? Are we going the right direction with him, do you think?
Well, absolutely going in the right direction, but the jury is out, you know, until it happens, it's all theory, but he's done the right things. I mean, he's won the PR war, the PR battle, hands down, said the right things, you know, carries himself with the media, you know, I think perfectly. And, you know, he's got the fans jacked, you know, with and there's so much. Again, the contrast between then and now, everybody follows every move in terms of recruiting now. And back then, it just wasn't the same thing. But he's got everybody excited with, you know, all the recruiting that he's doing and every website reporting on the latest guy that's been in Lincoln that came from Georgia or whatever. So, I mean, I don't think he could have done a better job except for last year wins and losses. I mean, if he'd come in here and won 8 or 9 games, that would have been even better. But, you know, he's got plenty of time to do that. I think this is an important year to show some improvement, and, we'll wait and see. That's why there's so much excitement and anticipation.
Yeah. 100%. Yep.
So, do you really go by Geoff, or I mean,
everybody is Jeff officially, but everybody calls me Geoff. It's been that way since I was like 5 years old. So, do not call me Jeff, Mr. Pavelka. Just call me Geoff.
You can just change the spelling, man.
Yeah. Talk to my mom and dad about that.
He spells it the wrong way. He spells it the wrong way.
Take it up with Rue and Peggy.
Yeah, there you go.
KP, this is an absolute thrill for me and the guys to have you on today. I mean, you know, you think about it, those of us Husker fans in our 40s and 50s, you've pretty much been a part of our whole lives as Husker fans. You know, I've got really, really fond memories of, you know, riding to football games and basketball games and having you on the radio on the way there and you on the radio on the way home. And if, you know, if it's a road game or, you know, we're old enough where there was football and basketball games that weren't even televised. And we're, mm-hmm. we're very, very spoiled because we got you instead. As a kid, I had a copy of, you brought up the Orange Bowl against Dennis Erickson and Warren Sapp and Ray Lewis in Miami and those guys. I had a copy of that Orange Bowl on VHS tape, and it was paired up with your radio call with Gary Saddlemeyer. And so there's so many great lines that you had in that game. You know, probably up there, in my opinion, with Lyle Bremser's Game of the Century radio call. I just got to ask, you know, you've got so many great lines in there, but to bring that trophy back to Lincoln line is just so iconic, you know, and we'd been through so many hard times and heartbreak and Tom Osborne not winning the big one. You know, what did it feel like to be for that? And what were you feeling as you said those words?
Well, first of all, you know, people sometimes ask me if, you know, I plan those kinds of things. And I'll admit, you know, I have a few notes on some of my basketball spotting boards that if the right occasion comes up, there's something I'm going to go to. But that one came out of my heart and soul. I mean, in the moment. And because at that precise moment in time, it was clear that they were going to bring that trophy back to Lincoln. And I, you know, it goes back to the fact that it had been so long in between national championships. And you talk about, you know, a fan base that had been loyal and had listened to Bremser all those years and then hung in there with us, you know, and you're right. We had a bunch of games that weren't on TV, so that helped us. But somebody the other day was asking me about what was it like? It was your dad, actually. I think it was your father. Asked me, because we have breakfast. On Saturdays, what was it like in the booth? And I said, man, I never thought about, you know, what, you know, I'm glad you asked that because I really thought about it, you know, at the end of the game and everything. But at the end of the game, we were packing up, the whole place was empty. The Orange Bowl was empty. It was just us in the booth getting our radio gear together. And we were kind of stunned. I mean, there wasn't a lot of chatter amongst the broadcast crew. No, you know, there were no words. And looking back on it, I expected, you know, I always had this fantasy of what it would be like. And, you know, I figured I'd be doing cartwheels and jumping up and down. But I don't know. In the moment, it was like a time to reflect on everything. And I was pretty sober, you know. Can't say I was later in the evening, but it was a monumental thing for Nebraska football to win that thing again, and everybody, I think, for the most part, you know, beyond just being really, really happy about achieving that, it was, I think, people felt that way for Tom Osborne. I mean, it was like, it was vindication for him for, you know, a lot of great years that didn't win them all. Well, they won them all that year. So, it was, thinking back on it, I can see it in my mind right now. You know, we got in the car and went back to the hotel and, commenced to party, but in between times, it was kind of like, wow, you know, I don't know what to say.
Did you have a chance to talk to Coach Osborne, like at some point after the game?
Yeah, I think we were at the Fontainebleau Hotel, and I found his room and knocked on the door, and he had his family in there. He opened the door. Hello, Kent. I said, I just got to tell you how happy I am for you. And he, you know, he was touched by the moment. I mean, he knew what it meant, but he was consistently the same guy. I mean, he would have opened the door if I'd pounded on it after an Oklahoma loss and with the same, it would have been the same Tom Osborne.
That's so cool. Sorry, Jeff, were you saying something?
No, go ahead.
Okay. Well, I got to ask you about a different game in history that maybe that, well, not maybe, that did not end quite as well. January 1, 1984, Orange Bowl game against Miami. The Huskers come in as heavy favorites, end up struggling for a lot of the game. Famously, they score on a gutsy 4th-and-8 option play with less than a minute left to pull within 1 point, 31-30. Osborne holds up two fingers to indicate they're going for two, and we all know how that ended up. But what's your memory of that whole sequence of events? Did you see him holding up the two fingers? Like, I'd love to know if you can picture that or what went through your mind with that.
Here's the deal. Back, that was the, I think, the last year that school networks weren't allowed to broadcast the bowl games. So I was watching it at home on TV.
Okay.
And that was the year, Bremser's final year. And so the next year I took over in 84. And so, you know, I didn't feel like I had as much, as many chips in the game as I would have had I had been there doing, if I had been doing the broadcast. But obviously, how old were you guys even around then? How old are you guys?
We were not quite two.
Yeah. Not quite two. Okay. Not, going for two and you were two.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, everybody in the state was except for the Richard heads, there weren't very many of them. You know, they were, you know, almost, there was unanimity that he did the right thing. You know, showed a lot of character. You know, if he'd gone for the tie, what would that have said? You know, and maybe they would have gone on to win it. But there wasn't any question he was going to go for two, and everybody, I think, all the fans agreed with that almost 100%.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well,
so the 84 Orange Bowl lost to Clemson was, that was the game that turned the corner in a way, I think, in terms of going to that next level. They struggled a little bit after that for 3 or 4 years, but then they really got good in the late 80s and in the 90s.
Sure. We remember that.
Oh yeah. We were old enough then.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, you've been around for a while, so I've got kind of a broader question for you. You've probably been around a lot of these teams quite a bit of time behind the scenes, and you probably see stuff that us common fans don't actually get to see, whether it's on television or in person. But do you have any, like, a really funny, or what's the funniest or craziest thing that you may have seen that's not common knowledge to the fan base? Is there anything out there, a story you could tell us that you would know that may, or your favorite one, I should say?
There's plenty, but I can't share any of them with you. I mean, I don't know that the statute of limitations has expired on some of the stuff that happened off the air. But, you know, that's been, without getting specific, and, you know, we can talk about it, but just in a general sense, that's been the real joy for me, is this journey since I grew up in Lincoln, and I watched football and basketball like you guys did when you were young. Nebraska, and went to the university and finished there. And it was always my dream to do this and be the voice of the Huskers. So it's been an unbelievable life. And notwithstanding getting, you know, exiled for 10 years at one point for the broadcasts and losing the football, which we can talk about if you'd like. But anyway, that question is so loaded. There's so many things with the broadcast crew, with the the relationships with the coaches, being on the road, preparation for games, you know, pouring your heart and soul into this thing on a level that I don't think I can explain, and it's been a joy to do it, but it's been an experience like none other. I mean, you would have had to have been in these shoes to know all the little things that have gone into it, and the reward, how rewarding it's been. I think the relationships are always the thing that trump anything you can talk about in terms of analyzing it. One of the things that has been interesting over the years is football and basketball. You know, while you're there doing the games, and I was a young man early, you know, believe it or not, I was a young man at one point. I wasn't that much older than the players, really. You know, I was 24 years old when I started doing basketball, and some of these guys were 20, I think, probably. So, you know, and now I'm older than their grandparents, the players on the bus, you know. Right. But it's been interesting, you know, as you're doing it year by year, decade by decade, in real time, the relationships with the players are not all that, they're good, but they're not real close. But boy, when they come back for a reunion or something, 20, 30, 40 years later, they look at me and sometimes treat me like a long lost brother. So, you know, that just speaks to what the value of this experience is for these guys and for anybody involved on this level. I mean, they didn't really appreciate the radio guys back in the day, but they do now. You know, they hear clips from the past games. And so I didn't get any specific stories, Geoff, but
that's all right.
It's been the relationships with everybody, the broadcasters around the conference, the writers, the sports information directors, the university sports information staff, the trainers, the equipment guys, the coaches. I mean, I could talk forever about all these coaches that I was privileged enough to have a relationship with. And now here it is, 2024, and still doing it in basketball. So it's been a lot of fun. 2024, this season will mark the 50th year since I started doing
that's crazy
Husker stuff. Wow. Now I didn't do them all because I was gone for some time, but it's been 50 years ago that I did my first Husker game.
That's wild.
Wow. Well, and something you said, I just want to touch on real quick. I mean, you growing up in Lincoln, and you know, you mentioned that would be, you know, kind of your dream to call Husker games. You know, I got to say, you know, it feels like it kind of comes through on your broadcast that you're not just calling the games for a paycheck, that you really love Nebraska athletics. And it just, I'm speaking for all of Husker Nation, it feels really good to kind of have one of us relaying the message and what's going on in the game.
Yeah.
So. Back in those days, you know, in 80s, 70s, 80s, 90s, it seems like coaches could be a little more unplugged and kind of let their personality show a little bit, not, you know, on guard all the time. Do you have maybe a favorite opposing football coach that Nebraska faced or even a least favorite? I mean, just a couple of, you know, the old football coach personalities that maybe you thought were amusing or didn't like at all.
Well, I always loved Switzer, you know. I mean, he was just the antithesis of Osborne, you know, smoked cigarettes on the sideline and, you know, everybody, you know, he enjoyed drinking beer.
Fur coats and all that stuff.
Fur coats, just, you know, and just as just the antithesis of Tom Osborne. So, you know, it was always interesting to see those two interrelate. And he had such great teams. I liked him. A lot of people hated Oklahoma, including him, I suppose. Gosh, that's a good question with football. I could respond in basketball. There have been way more coaches that I've had occasion to have contact with that I thought were jerks than in football. You want to go there?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, for sure.
How about Bob Knight from Indiana?
Oh, that's a good place to start.
You know, it was 1976, I think, that went up to Bloomington for a holiday tournament. It was Nebraska, Creighton, Indiana, and SMU. And in those days, I did the games by myself. I didn't have a color man, so I had all the equipment to set up and planning the whole thing out. And, you know, at halftime, I needed for a restroom break. So I used to take a a little cassette recorder with me and spot somebody before the game and get a little 3-minute interview to play while I went, you know, took a break. So we're in Bloomington before our game. It might have been the night before, whatever. We're there, and somebody said, "Well, there's Bobby Knight over there." And I thought, "Who's Bobby Knight?" I mean, he wasn't Bobby Knight then, you know, right?
Right.
I thought, "Oh, that's a good idea." So I walked up to him and I introduced myself and asked him, I thought pretty graciously, if he could spare 3 minutes so that I could do this little taping thing with him. And he was a big guy. I'm 6'3". He was like 6'6", I think. And he was with some people in the crowd and kind of stopped and looked at me. You got 30 seconds. And I just about melted. I mean, I should have turned around and left, but of course I'm shaken by then because Bob Knight's, you know, playing a big time deal on me. So I never liked him. I mean, in basketball, you see these guys' personality way more on the sidelines than you do in football, and how they treat players. You know, I just don't think there's any room for that anymore. I know Coach Hoiberg loves Tom Izzo, and I think he's a great guy, probably for everything I've heard, and a good coach, but I don't like the way he treats his players during games. I just don't like that. Right. So, you know, anybody like that, I don't have any time for. I just don't, you know.
What about some of those old Big Eight basketball coaches? Dirk did that unbelievable, you know, multi-part series about the Danny Nee era.
Yeah.
World Herald a few years ago. And it brought back so many memories. Yeah. That was like, we were kids in the Danny Nee era, but we'd go to a lot of those games. Who are some of your favorite or least favorite of those Big Eight?
That era was great. I mean, Danny was, you know, in the mix in terms of a unique personality. I love the guy. And he was, I don't think he's been given the credit that he's due in terms of how good they were back in those days.
Agreed.
I was really glad to have him back last year on the 25th reunion of the Big Eight champ holiday tournament or postseason tournament championship. He came back. And I think he was touched by how warm everybody was and how everybody felt toward him. I told him, drove him over to the arena for that game. And I said, "You're going to be surprised today how much people love you." And he found out. But anyway, Danny was Nebraska's guy in that mix. But you had Johnny Orr at Iowa State. There was nobody like him. They played da-da-da-da-da, you know, the Tonight Show theme at Hilton Coliseum, and he'd come in and the spotlight's on him. And I mean, it was just a show. It was showbiz. And, you know, he was irascible in terms of what things he would say and how he – I mean, he was clever. He was funny, and yet he didn't take any prisoners with the officials. Billy Tubbs at Oklahoma was one of a kind. Yeah. I mean, he was just a nasty little guy, you know. And Norm Stewart, you know.
Oh yeah.
You had Eddie Sutton at Oklahoma State. Who am I missing? Who was at Kansas State and Kansas? It was the golden era of Big Eight basketball, there's some great memories there for me.
Was it Missouri that was such a terrible place to play, and they throw batteries at the players when they were warming up or something? Was that Missouri?
Yeah, they had a student group called the Antlers. And these guys, they would imagine, you guys, you know, I'm surprised this doesn't happen more at PBA, but you know, the student, this group of guys, I mean, I think you had to audition to be in the Antlers because they were just nasty. And they would get information about players' families. And I mean, they would be really, really rude. So Jake can tell you some stories about some things they said about him, but anyway, it was 1982. They were 19-0 And we were pretty good that year. Mo Iba was the coach after Joe Cipriano had passed away. And we had lost at home to them in a real low-scoring game like 10 days before we played them in Columbia. And we went in there. They were 19-0, ranked number one in the country. They had a big center, Steve Stepanovich, and John Sundvold was their point guard. And they, of course, I'm sure thought that there wasn't going to be any problem beating Nebraska that day. Well, Nebraska won the game 67-51. I mean, we just slapped them around, beat number one. That was I've gotten to call knocking up number one teams twice now. That one and then this last one last year.
Yeah.
So I'm by myself in this. They had us kind of in the stands. I was broadcasting the game, and I've lost my mind, of course, and I'm completely oblivious to what the fans think, because I'm just doing my thing, and Nebraska's going to win. And of course, the fans, including the Antlers, had lost interest and hope, with about 10 minutes or five or 10 minutes to go in the game. And these guys started looking at me instead of the game, and they started throwing stuff at me, like soda cans and popcorn and stuff like that. And so it got to the point where I just told the audience, I said, you're going to have to forgive me here. I know that this is not what you expected to hear, but I've got to tone it down. I'm kind of concerned for my equipment because they're throwing stuff at me. So that's how I finished the game.
Like oh that. My gosh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Like a golf announcer, Jim Nance, my Jim Nance impression. Yeah. That I'll never forget that game. And a lot of people remember it. Unfortunately, I don't have a recording of it. I'd love to hear the end of that again, but
gosh. Crazy. Okay, that's intense. Well, Kent, you mentioned if you're willing to get into it a little bit, you mentioned kind of having to be done with the football announcing part of it, and taking a breather, I think from all of it for a period of years.
Yeah.
I kind of remember that from when we were kids. I don't remember all the story behind that, if you'd be willing to share with us.
Well, there was a right, back in those days, there had been four originating broadcasts, KFAB in Omaha, who I worked for. We did the games. KLIN in Lincoln did the games. They had an announcer at every game. So did KFOR in Lincoln. And so did WW Radio in Omaha, four different broadcasts. So fans across the country had a chance to, listen to whoever they wanted to. And then I forgot what year it was. They put it up for bid, and we won, KFAB won the exclusive rights. And so the first year I did the games, we were the only broadcast. And we were the only broadcast in it was 93 or 94, where they put it up for bid again. And KFAB got beat in the bidding process. And so the new rights owner, Bill Byrne, is the athletic director at the time. And he told me it was really important to him that I be willing to talk to the new rights holder about, leaving KFAB and joining them, working for them. And so I can continue to do the games. I said, sure, I'll talk to him. But the guy that I was dealing with, he basically, dunked me and drowned me. I mean, the boss, the guy that owned KFAB, was telling me during this process, you don't want to jump into that real fast. You're really valuable, and you got to make them earn their money. You got to make them pay. And so I got taken in on that by that. I got to thinking that was a pretty big deal. And this guy didn't want to budge in terms of salary, and just hired somebody else. And it was just, I woke up in the morning, one morning, and it was in the front page of the paper that he had decided to hire this other guy. That's how I found out about it.
Yeah. Oof. Dang.
So I was exiled. I was in exile for 10 years. Wow. And then, Steve Peterson, you can't find a lot of people who want to say much good about Steve, but I will. I mean, he called and asked me if I would want to come back and do basketball. So, he was a good friend of mine, and he brought me back to do basketball. Kind of disappointed. There were a couple of guys that were announcers doing football at the time, and there was an opening, and they didn't ask me back to do football again. But anyway, it was a that's a personal story, but you know, and a that's lot of people, and they also the rights holder who did not hire me took so much grief about not hiring me that he got a hold of the World Herald. And the World Herald did this expose, and it was a front page story in the paper about all the stuff that I had asked for in the contract negotiations. Right. And they made me out to be like this, you know, this guy that was trying to rob the bank, you know, and he wanted to smear me in terms of asking for too much money. God forbid, God forbid. These days I'm on the airplane, I'm looking around and the coaches and the, now the players, and I'm thinking, God, I'm the only one not making any money. You know,
that's got to be tough to go through that all is. That.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it was a long time ago, but that's what happened. And from my point of view, I mean, the guy that didn't hire me, he would tell it differently. But
sure.
Well, I don't remember. I don't have a great memory of all that, but I just remember being about 13 or 14 years old and being like, why the hell isn't Kent Pavelka doing the radio calls?
Because they wanted to pay me $30,000 a year. That's why. I mean, you know, the thing in broadcasting, and it's still a reality, is that people who own radio stations and broadcast rights and networks, they're in it to make money. And the last thing they care about, this guy told me when I was negotiating with him, he said, I can put Donald Duck in the booth if I want to. And he did, basically. But, you know, there's two customers when it comes to broadcast. It's the advertiser is one customer, and that's all ownership is concerned about. You know, just you're going to get a talent as cheap as you can get it. And without understanding that the talent is the product and the only thing that the public relates to. They don't care about your ad sales.
Yep.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I think that's, I honestly, you start to feel like we're communicating today. I think you start to feel like, you know, you've got a relationship with this person who you're, you know, who's calling your game, the games for your favorite team. And there's a source of comfort in that. And you're, you know, they're the voice, like we said, the voice of the Huskers for our generation. And so,
yeah, you know, it's interesting that I just don't mean to interrupt you, but
no.
We're talking a little bit about the reality of listeners feeling, you know, that through the radio broadcast that they're close to the game.
Yeah.
And that was always my ambition and mission when I first started doing this was I had two objectives. One, to try to describe things as detailed as possible so people would get a mental picture where the ball was and what was happening, you know, and that's a challenge. Because you can get to going too fast too. I mean, you got to have a pace to it, but that's what you want to do primarily is give the listener this mental picture. But I also thought that with Nebraska, hey, I'm from Lincoln. I graduated there. I know that my audience are fans. I mean, I'm not working for ESPN or CBS and worried about, you know, being I'll be objective in terms. I mean, you can't challenge me for saying that something wasn't true that I said, but the enthusiasm with which I say it, the whole point of that is to make the listener feel like they're there and part of it. Cause I think that's why they listen. Cause they want to be, they don't have a ticket. They're in Ainsworth and they want to see, you know, tune in to find out if Nebraska is going to beat Purdue and they're emotionally invested. And I know that when I'm calling a game and I know they feel the same way when the ball goes in and we win the game as I do. I mean, I want them to feel the reality of the arena at that night.
That's awesome. I mean, I to kind of piggyback off what you said there, and TJ mentioned it too, just like you have almost a relationship. It's like, I always phrase it with my buddies at work. It's like a warm blanket. You have you have that voice, that sound, and it's just something that just brings you comfort. And so,
well, you know, and it's not me. I mean, it's just,
I think it is you.
People felt the same way about Bremser, and he understood that. He understood what it was all about. And I, you know, I facetiously sometimes tell people, hey, you don't have to be any good at this. Just hang around long enough. don't get fired. And then, you know, you end up being like an old shoe, you know, you feel like an old comfortable blanket, an old comfortable shoe.
Love it. You hear that, guys? We just need to hang around long enough. If we're going to be good at this,
yeah,
just hang
around long absolutely.
Yep. There you go. Ooh.
Do you still make it to any football games, Kent? I feel like
no.
There's no honorary suite, free tickets, free food.
Are you kidding me? I was put out to pasture, and there's, you know, I've got a little bit of an attitude about what happened and that nobody's reached out. So I know I watch the games and I want them to win, but I'm not going out. I'm not, you know, they wanted me. I had season tickets. My family did for 50 years since 62 when Devaney got there. And a couple of years ago, they called, you got to start paying, you know. No, I'm not paying you anything for these seats.
I got you.
You know,
well, sure,
plus I'm not going to go sit in them. Yeah. You know, so you know, you can accuse me of having a big ego, and I'm probably guilty about that, you know, resentment, maybe a little bit still. Yeah.
No, that, I appreciate your honesty on that, and I mean, what you went through was both intensely personal and very public, and so it's certainly understandable. That's you have a very unique perspective, and I think it's quite understandable.
Yeah.
I know we want to ask you a little bit about the coming basketball season, but the name has come up a couple times here. So before we do that, real quick, I just would love to ask you, and this is before our time, but we all are familiar with the famous game of the century call and Johnny Rogers punt return. And just from hearing from our parents, what was Lyle Bremser like?
He was a taskmaster. I mean, he was my boss. He was the general manager at KFAB. And, you know, if you were a listener, you didn't understand that relationship. So, and I was, you know, he did the games for 46 years, and I stepped in the booth at age 24, and he intimidated the hell out of me. And I mean, he was a good man, and he was my mentor, but I was intimidated by him the entire time I worked beside him. So I don't have the same warm fuzzies as listeners do. You know, it was my experience with him for 10 years was very nerve-wracking. And he was demanding. I spotted Nebraska. You know, this is, you know, behind the scenes stuff. You have spotting boards, and in football, you can't be as detailed as you can in basketball. There's too many players to watch. So you got spotters telling you things with hand signals. And boy, if you miss something, bam, he'd elbow you in the ribs. Funny story, you know, about 5 years into it, I kept thinking, well, if I hang around long enough, you know, maybe he'll pass the baton on to me, which eventually happened. But I remember one time in Lincoln, before a game, several years before that happened, right before kickoff, he had gone to use the restroom, and he got locked in the bathroom. He got locked in. And it was like, you know, 30 seconds before airtime, before the game was going to start. And everybody was trying to get him, open the door, get the door open for him so he could get on the air. And I was thinking, God, I hope they don't get the door open for him, you know. This is my chance. Bremser's locked in the bathroom.
That is so awesome.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, but he was a great announcer and a good man and a good teacher.
Beauty.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, KP, we've got to ask you about Husker hoops. Out of the three of us common fans, I'm probably the biggest Husker hoops fan.
Matt, let me answer the first question. It's Buchtonville. Sergei Buchtenjel.
Our new guy, yeah.
You were going to ask how to pronounce his name.
Okay, all right, okay.
I wasn't, but I'm glad you gave I had to
gather myself and with it and deliver it before you could ask me and put me on the spot. Sergei Buchtenjel. Transfer from
Buchtenjel. Okay.
Transfer, I don't want to
transfer from UCLA.
Yeah.
And I think he's going to be a big key to the Huskers' success this year.
Yeah, I'm sort of annoyed that Matt's just taking the mantle of best fan, but we'll sort that out later. Go ahead, Matt. Go ahead.
Hey, there's no question about it. I have the mantle as the biggest Husker Hoops fan out of the three of us.
Oh, all right. Okay. I see how it is.
KP, I'm a huge, huge fan of Coach Hoiberg. I love his demeanor. I love the way he's kind of adjusted to the Big Ten. And I love, you know, mention how coaches treat their players. I think it seems, at least from a fan perspective, he treats them pretty damn good. He's really seemed to have some things figured out here over the last season and a half. What can us common fans expect for this coming hoop season? Do you like our chances to get back to the big dance?
I do. I've been down a couple times to watch them this summer, and I think they, broad stroke impression is yes. I mean, they've got really good players. Now, I don't think they've got a great player. Any probably not going to have anybody first team all Big Ten, but they might have a second teamer. I mean, Bryce Williams is in that category. I think it's going to be important that Bryce Williams and Juwan Gary have the kind of seasons where you look at somebody's career and you say, you know, between his junior and senior year, they really stepped up.
Yeah.
For them to be really, 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 really good, I think those guys need to have that kind of year. They can't be not as good as last year, but they need to be better than they were last year. That's for starters. And then if that happens, and Buchtenjel is what I think he could be, I mean, 6'9", 215 pounds, very skilled, at UCLA, he was just playing for the wrong coach in the wrong system. This is a pipe dream, but if he is like Bryce Williams, Juwan Gary good, now you got three really, really, really good players. Now, you got 2-point guards. You didn't have one last year. You got two big posts. Rink Mask's loss, absence because of knee surgery, is significant, but those two big guys they've got can really play. And shooters, you got to be kidding me. Asijan, Griffiths, Williams. I don't have the roster in front of me, but I'm telling you, they're going to be able to shoot it. And I don't think they're going to miss Tominaga or Wiltshire that much because, number one, CJ was a defensive liability, and so was CJ in a way. Tominaga and CJ. The guys that will be playing are going to be better defensively, but they've also got guys that can shoot it just as well as those two did in tandem. So, and they're deep. So, and you know, last year, let's be honest, they finished third, almost finished second in the league with a collection of players that, you know, you look at what Indiana has gotten in terms of their recruiting, you know, all kinds of five stars and, you know, best transfers in the country. Fred Hoiberg has fashioned a culture that includes being able to find really good players that are a little bit under the radar, but guys that will play in his system the way he wants to. You know, he didn't have that the first 3-4 years.
Right.
But I mean, I think he's got it going. And I think they can be better than last year. I don't know that that means they'll win as many games because the Big Ten is going to be way better than it was last year and more teams. But, you know, I think that they got a chance to win enough to get into the tournament. And I think that they're going to be better equipped in the tournament to win a game than they were last year.
I'd love to follow up on that, Kent, just about Coach Hoiberg and sort of your, like, you make such a good point. You know, he came here, the first 3 years were really rough. And I think people were kind of questioning, I thought we were getting this great, great coach and whatever. And to his credit, I think he was humble and open-minded enough to change his approach a bit. And then that's fourth season, what were we, about 500 that year, but they really came on strong at the end of the year and had some big wins.
Mm-hmm.
And then last year they broke through and got to the dance. So it feel like, I think he's, you know, he's proven his chops once again as a head coach, but also feels like he's kind of figured some things out. Can you talk just about that evolution and what you've seen from him? And I'm super impressed by it, but would love to hear your take on it.
Well, he's got a different staff. And recruiting wise, he's gotten better players and a different kind of player. And what I don't mean to disparage anybody, but you know, it's those first few years, that first year he got here like 10 minutes before the season started. So, I mean, he couldn't recruit. He just had to take warm bodies. And when you take warm bodies, you take personalities and guys who don't necessarily fit your culture in terms of the ideal work ethic, maybe commitment to playing the way you want them to play and that they need to play. So he had guys on those teams that, I mean, we had point guards that wouldn't give the ball up. You remember?
Yep.
For two or three straight years. Well, so now, like I said a minute ago, I mean, he's got a formula that they're now the Nebraska fans can step up and bear responsibility in football and basketball. You know, if we knew, I'm kind of going all over the place here, but one point, if we knew what Creighton's 13 team budget is, NIL budget, the week Nebraska plays them, wouldn't that be great information for the fans? Wouldn't that be, if it were common knowledge, Nebraska's 105 player NIL budget compared to Ohio State's the week before you play them, that would explain a lot of things.
Yeah.
That would explain a lot of things, like why you're not winning or why you are winning. So I don't see any reason that shouldn't happen, but man, it's the wild, wild west now. I don't know what's going to happen, but I think Coach Hoiberg and has got a program. He'll roll with the punches and adjust to whatever the reality is, the paradigm, and that's going to change. But I'll tell you what, all I know is I went down there and I was impressed with they got 10 guys that can play. Last year, when you went to the bench, you didn't get any better, but this year you got guys five deep on the bench who can really, really, really help you.
That's pretty exciting.
Yeah. I think that's just my take.
Right. Well, and it sounds like the great Kent Pavelka is encouraging common fans to support NIL efforts at the University of Nebraska. So let's go Husker fans, with the best fans in the nation, with the best fans in the nation. Even $5 a month can help your team.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've not heard or seen anybody in the media put that suggestion out there. Do you agree? Yeah.
Coach Rhule has made that point. You're right. I think you're exactly right. It is the Wild West, and you think about like with NIL and the transfer portal, even in the pros, there's free agency, but then you have to sign a contract and stay somewhere for 3 or 4 years.
Right.
In college, there's no transparency about who's making what. No. You can transfer every year. It is the Wild West. It's not good for student athletes, in my opinion. I think we've talked about this off and on over many episodes. And I think that we're all on board with athletes getting a slice of the pie. Absolutely. The reason there's revenue is because of the athletes. And so they should get a piece of that pie, but they've got to put some guardrails in place. They've got to put some structure in place. And I totally agree with your point, Kent, about transparency and just putting it, just putting it out there.
We know the Kansas City Royals don't have the budget that the New York Yankees do. And we know, the different salary structures of NBA teams. Why not? Why not?
Yeah. I think you're exactly right. And that seems like a simple one. No, that seems like a simple one. Everyone knows you can't make it even or equal across all universities, but at least having that required transparency, I think, would go a long way. So I think you're exactly right on that.
For less than, than the price of a cup of coffee, common fans, you can support a Husker player.
Yeah.
Love it. Well, Matt, Jeff, any other questions or comments for Mr. Pavelka here?
I have an off the wall follow up question.
I believe you do, Geoff.
I'm a big breakfast guy, and you mentioned that you go out to eat breakfast. What's your favorite breakfast menu item? Are you eggs Benedict guy, omelet guy, French toast guy?
Two eggs over medium.
Okay.
Either link or patty sausage, kind of crisp in a way. I want a little edge on the cooking on the sausage.
Sounds delicious.
Eggs over medium, toast, dry with peanut butter and hash browns.
Lovely. I'm an over easy guy myself.
What was the last? Did you say anchovies?
Hash browns.
Oh, hash browns.
So Mike, Matt, you tell Mike, the price of this doing this is breakfast on him for, I don't know, in perpetuity.
You got it.
Then crank it up.
Mike won't have a problem with that.
You better order steak and eggs then, damn it.
He's got the money. I know he's got the money.
Oh, thank you so much, Kent. This was truly enjoyable. What an incredible privilege to have the opportunity to talk to you today. Thank you so much for doing this.
Appreciate you guys. It was fun.
Thanks, Kent.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Kent. Fall camp is underway. Common fans, we are less than a month before kickoff. Optimism is sky high for the Nebraska football team, and we are here to help you get ready for the season. Thanks for hanging with us Common fans once again. Thanks to Kent Pavelka one more time for joining us. We will have plenty more for you soon, Common fans. As always, in the meantime, GBR for life.